Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the 195.1 FM, and since 1968, KYMN AM. And at one time, believe it or not, we were the only AM stereo in the entire Midwest. Of course, that died out. But good morning. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. My wife, believe it or not, went to a Timberwolves game last night. And she took the defeated Jesse James Day's ambassadors with her. That's five people. And, of course, representing Northfield. And defeated Jesse James Day's as they were announced at the Timberwolves game, which they lost to Houston last night. So always working to promote Northfield. I stayed home because I wanted to attend a party. I went to a party last night. I'd say last night, 6 o'clock, and it was at the Grand Theater, and it was a party that the late Danny Hyatt wanted. Danny passed away last week, and he said, I want to have a party. So they had a nice party put on by his family. Lots and lots of people were there, and people got up to talk about the late Danny Hyatt, and I took advantage of that and talked about all of his wonderful assets. And he was a guy that took risks and, of course, had many different companies and ended up with a very successful business here in Northfield called Service Master. So I have to give you my condolences to the family of Danny Hyatt. Well, here we are at 9:05 on the Wayne Eddy Affair this Monday morning, and it is the 19th day of March, and the year is 2018. By the way, did you have a fun time on St. Patrick's Day? I like to brag that my paternal grandmother came from Ireland, County Clare, spoke Gaelic, so I didn't even wear green. But I'll tell you what, I've got a couple of guests in studio that I've been waiting for at least 3 months, I suppose. But Brad, make sure I get this correct, Kabil, right?
Krabiel.
I had it right the very first time. Well, my audience knows I screw up names. Krabiel. And you have a pretty responsible job, don't you?
Yeah, I'm president of Home Federal Savings Bank in Rochester, Minnesota.
And I know something that you probably don't know I know.
What's that?
Owatonna.
Yes, you do. We're expecting to open our branch there in Owatonna later this month.
Okay, so how many branches will you have then?
That'll make about 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And something that I have to tell you about Brad is that he contacted me, I think maybe through the radio station first.
Yep.
And then we got together by text, if you know how to do that. Good luck. I have a car that has a Bluetooth, and if you get a message and you want to put a thumbs up on it, it won't let you do it, you know, while you're in the car. It won't let you do it. Can't text.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good idea. And the text was from somebody that I think our other guest here this morning, Jerry Lance, correct? Jerry Lance?
That's
hello.
Right.
How are you doing?
I am doing great. Monday morning, it couldn't be more beautiful. I'm happy.
You have the hair of a guy that probably could conduct a symphony orchestra.
Well, simply enough, when I was a kid, this was the style. I mean, people wore their hair longer. And had I gone on to be an attorney or a physician or maybe even a radio announcer, I might have cut it to a conventional length. But since I was a conductor, I could get away with keeping it long. And please, Wayne, don't be jealous.
I am envious. You have a beautiful head of hair. It's all white and gray. Say, by the way, I was talking about texting. Do you know a guy by the name of okay, Brandon Sampson?
Yeah, I know Brandon. You bet.
Okay, we were communicating this morning.
Well, hello.
Because tomorrow I have to go down there on 4th and 4th.
Yes.
And get my...
Which is where we used to have our symphony office in Rochester.
Oh,
we
cool.
were upstairs from Brandon, you bet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great location.
Oh, perfect.
Anyhow, my prosthesis is cracked. And I don't want to have it. I'm going to bowl tonight, and hopefully it's not going to finally fall. But anyhow, I'm sure Brandon says hello to you.
We did a show together on music of the Beatles just a few months ago.
Oh, yeah.
He's a wonderful singer, great performer, and I was conducting a group of strings accompanying the Beatles songs, and it was great. Brandon's top drawer.
Yes, and he has that band called 6 Mile Grove.
That's his group, yep.
And he's performed here in Northfield at the Grand Theater. So, you know, I always say there's always something in common. No matter who you meet, you'll find a commonality and relax and be able to shoot the bull.
Well, I have to say, music is often that commonality.
And it is the language of the world.
Amen.
And speaking about music, you know that here in Northfield, Minnesota, that we are known for our great music through St. Olaf College.
I have to tell you, when some years ago, actually it happened two different periods, 7 or 14 years apart. You know, faculty members at universities, colleges, take sabbaticals every 7 years. And Stephen Amundson, who has directed the orchestra at St. Olaf for many years, took his sabbatical some years ago and called me up and said, listen, I'm going to be gone for a semester. You want to teach my orchestra? I said, love to. So I commuted to Northfield several times a week to work with the orchestra, put on concerts, had a great time. And it worked out so well that when he took his next sabbatical, he called me again. And so I've spent some considerable time on the campus at St. Olaf in front of the orchestra. Wonderful folks, wonderful facility, and we did wonderful concerts.
And did you stop at the local restaurants, the local gas stations, and spend money?
I did to some degree, but I did more of that about 3 weekends ago when my wife and I wanted to get away. She said, let's go to Northfield.
Really?
So we stayed at the Archer House, and we walked the campuses of both colleges and had a beautiful time doing that, and had some very good food. It's a place called the Oldie Store.
Delicious. The person I mentioned that passed away, he used to own the Oldie Store.
Wow.
And
didn't know that.
The fellow that owns it now also owns it Grand. And he was at the party. So, yes, the Oldie Store has been known for over 50 years. Used to be a grocery store with a little tiny cafe, and then freezer lockers where farmers would store their beef.
So that's what we had for dinner then.
One of those types of, they're a little more fancy now.
And it was delicious. It really was. And my wife and I determined that should we decide to stay, depending on where our kids end up, but when we retire, where should we go? And Christina said, you know, Northfield looks pretty good. Looks pretty good for a place
like
to retire.
That's great. Do you take the shortcut? County Road 9 and go through Denison?
We always take County Road 9. Yeah. You bet.
Brendan has been on my show many times, and the first time he came, I said, the only thing that you have to do is take one left turn to get onto the freeway. And once you're on the freeway, one left turn, and you drive right to the studios.
Well, there you go.
I mean, that's 246 right there.
They build it for you.
Yeah, it's wonderful. If you just tuned in, thank you very much. It's 11 past 9 o'clock on this beautiful Monday morning. Our guests this morning include Rochester Symphony Orchestra conductor. Is that the proper title?
That's close enough.
Okay. Well, what would you prefer?
That's fine.
Okay. Jerry Lance is his name. And thanks to Brad Crabiel. Get out the pen, get out the phonetics.
So you weren't brought up Mennonite like Brad, so you don't know those words then. All right.
Where does that come from, Krabiel?
That's German.
Okay. Krabiel. There.
There you go.
Spell it phonetically. Krabiel. Okay. Krabiel. Krabiel. Okay, there's the right on there. All right. And you, of course, I was very happy to that you got in contact with me and telling me that you were a good buddy of the guy that runs the symphony, and he would be an interesting guest, and I think you're right. And so I want to personally thank you right now on the air for bringing him here today.
Well, Wayne, you know, I've listened to your show for years, as I got involved with the Rochester Symphony Orchestra and Chorale Board, I got to know Jerry better, and it became very clear to me that he would make a great guest. And just your interview style and the way Jerry can communicate with those in attendance of the orchestra performances, it's a perfect match. So I'm glad that we could get some time on your schedule.
Oh, yeah, we'll take all the time we need. By the way, Brad, I want you to know, or Jerry, excuse me, have you ever performed at the theater up on 7 on in downtown St. Paul?
Well, at the Ordway?
At the Ord, thank you.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Would you know that the person that was in charge of building that thing was from Northfield?
Didn't know that.
Yes. Nope. He passed away, unfortunately, but he was the man to get, you know, approve all the plans, make sure that they met their views. So if you enjoyed that, you can say, hey, a guy from Northfield, Dixon Bond was his name.
Uh-huh.
And you can say, hey, a guy from Northfield, you know, built this place.
Something interesting about the Ordway is when you are on the stage in the Ordway and you conduct, you can hear all the instruments and how they blend together better, I think, than any other place I've ever conducted. You get that feeling. Now, Orchestra Hall in Minneapolis have a very high ceiling and those cubes behind, and it throws the sound. It throws the sound out beautifully into the hallway. So in the hall, you can hear the instruments great, but it's hard to get the balance exactly right when you're standing there in front of the orchestra in Orchestra Hall. But in the Ordway, it works perfectly.
Now, I don't know a whole lot about music other than I like it, and it's the international language. But at one time, the Defeated Jesse James days had drum and bugle corps.
Sure.
And we competed all over southern Minnesota. We brought in people from Madison and all that.
And Wisconsin has a lot of drum and bugle corps.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
And we had a big show and then did a parade. And then we'd go out and do parades. And at one time, unfortunately, the fellow that was running, I along with every Tom, Dick, and Harry, and that's the truth, Tom Posh, Dick Seuss, and Harry, I forget his last name, were the people that made it a company, a nonprofit. So anyhow, we didn't have our conductor or whatever. What do you call a guy in a drum? The major.
Drum major, yeah. Yeah.
He wasn't there, and we were practicing, and they said he might not make the parade tomorrow. Why don't you do it? And I said, okay. And I stood there, and I went, and, of course, the horns brought their horns up. I'm gesticulating, folks. And then I did, and 1, 2, 3, 4, hit it. And then they started playing, and I'm doing this. Right now, folks, I'm conducting the drum and bugle corps. And all of a sudden
And they sound great, too, by the way.
Yeah.
With you conducting, they sound terrific.
I thought they did. But I just could not have the confidence that I could do this during a parade and keep that beat constantly going. And I watch conductors, and I've always admired them very much. So my question is, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Do you play musical instruments yourself?
Yes. I started studying piano when I was 8 years old, and then I took up the trombone a little bit after that. I still play piano, but as for the trombone, I've kind of let it slide. So I don't play that anymore.
You lost your lips?
Yeah, choppers anymore.
Yeah.
And people think that in order to lead a group, to be a conductor of a band or an orchestra, you should be able to play all the instruments in it.
Oh.
And that is true if you're a music educator. So if you're going to be teaching, say, high school band, you learn how to play some of the woodwind instruments, clarinet or saxophone, little flute. You learn how to play the brass instruments. You learn how to play percussion so that you can teach them to kids. But at the level, if you are conducting at a professional level, there's no way you can possibly play the instruments as well as your professionals do. You need to know how they work. You need to know which notes are hard to play in tune, how the bow works for the string instruments. And I studied some strings, took some viola lessons. My teacher said I had very little talent at it, and I think she was right. but I married a violinist and asked her a lot of her advice. And Christina tells me when I'm doing something wrong for the strings. And the nice thing is over the years she's told me that less and less frequently. So
now,
I must be learning something.
You married a violin.
I did.
For how long have you been married?
It'll be 30 years this Christmas.
Is she a cello now?
Ah, ha, ha, ha. No.
That was supposed to be funny.
I know. It was okay. Supposed to be. Wayne, you need a new writer.
I do. I actually do. I got I've got Brad here, so that might help.
No, it's got to help.
918 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Oh, by the way, I can't forget our friends at the Quarterback Club, which is locally owned and locally managed for 50 years. Started by the Minnesota Viking players, it failed and was taken over by a fellow by the name of Swenson, and Larry Benjamin bought it, the late Larry, unfortunately. And then Dale Finger bought it from him, and Dale worked there when he was a kid in high school. So it's really local, and their food is fantastic, and they have these baby back barbecued ribs with mountains of madness just oozing all over them in the form of a special sauce.
Wayne, I'm getting hungry. Tummy's starting to growl at me.
And roasted chicken. They have roasted chicken if you like that. I like the skin on that. Yeah, and burgers. They're the only place in town that has flame broiled burgers. How about that? And they serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and they say, come on in. Prices are very reasonable. Service is unbelievable. Unbelievably fast. That's the QB, the Quarterback Club, in Northfield, Minnesota, 919. My guests this morning include Brad Krabiel and, did I get it? I did it. And Jerry Lance. Do you spell your name J-E-R-E?
That's all I have on my birth certificate. That's all there was.
Okay.
The problem was, when I was born, I had an older brother. I was supposed to be a girl. They had a name picked out. In those days, you didn't know, you know, what you're going to be. So, they all of a sudden had to find a guy's name. And my grandfather had a friend who spelled it that way, so they slapped that on me. It was not a family tradition or anything like that. However, the advantage of having my name spelled J-E-R-E and the last name L-A-N-T-Z means I believe I'm the only person in the history of the human race who has ever had that combination first and last name. If you Google me, you don't get anybody else.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, so, you know.
Okay.
Well, that means I can't hide either.
Okay. Well, I thought because it's the Rochester Symphony Orchestra that it would be Jerry Lunch.
That's an idea. We never thought of that.
Jerry. Oh,
we're going to make a change. A
thousand times you've probably heard it. So I'm going to talk about you and how you ended up here in Rochester, I should say. And I'm trying to remember the name of the guy that amputated my leg. Everybody knows him. He even has his own radio show down there. Dr. Tall, good-looking guy. I'm sure he's a man of the arts, but
It's his own radio show in Rochester.
Yeah, I think once a month he does a show about a specific item. And I can't remember the guy's name.
It's not Paul Scanlon, is it?
No, but when I hear it, I'll say that's it. Okay. But I know you probably have met him. I mean, how many doctors do you know in Rochester, Minnesota?
More than I could count.
That's the point I want to make sure people understand. Rochester's not a little town like Northfield. You know how many people we have living in Northfield?
24,000.
20,007.
Oh, 20,007?
Yeah.
I was close.
Yeah, and when I first came to town, it was like 5,000. Some hundred.
Wow.
But then they passed a law that the students across the nation could register to vote, so you kept them in your population.
Right.
Which is good when you get money from the federal government. You know, the bigger population, the bigger monies. So that works out pretty good. And we have about 3,500 at St. Olaf and around 1,800 at Carleton. Just a little bit of information for you while you and your wife were walking the campuses wondering how many students there were.
Thank you, Wayne.
You're welcome. So I'm going to tell you what year you were born, all right?
Okay.
1949.
You know way too much.
Am I correct?
You are correct.
Well, you know what's nice about people that are born in the 90s?
Tell me.
Well, you can say, I lived in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the Aughts,
yes.
And then the teens, so like 8.
Now I'm feeling old.
Well, look at, don't feel old. You're looking really good shape. My guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair, thanks to a fellow by the name of Gabriel, Brad, has brought Jerry Lance here. And Jerry, What is the official title that's on your letterheads
and
stuff like that?
It's complicated because I've been conducting the orchestra in Rochester and the chorale, too, since 1980. I'm in my 38th season.
Wow.
But 2.5 years ago, the board of directors let their enthusiasm outrun their good judgment, and they asked me to become, in addition to being the music director, to be also the executive, the administrative head of it, too. So my official title, are you ready?
I am.
Okay, President, CEO, and Artistic Director of the Rochester Symphony. Which every time I say it makes me feel tired because it's a lot to do.
What are the initials? Can you do the initials?
I never tried.
Let's say it again.
President and slash, I'm a slash guy. Okay. President slash CEO and Artistic Director.
Okay. PCAD. Sounds like a disease.
Okay.
925 on KYMN Radio. So I always start where were you born and all that, and get to your career. That's pretty good since 1980. That's a long time. And, you know, there always seems to be some sort of a battle in the Twin Cities, for example, with getting conductors. And they get the great ones, and then they have a misunderstanding, and then they have strikes and all that. How big is your orchestra?
It depends upon which concert, but we go from like 60 to 75 players.
Okay. And what are the names of the various places? Like, do you call it wind instruments, stringed instruments?
Absolutely. We have a string
percussion
section. Yep, and brass. You've just named it. So we got strings, winds, brass, and percussion. Yes, sir.
Now, is that a joke that you see when there's one person standing there and they do the triangle thing maybe once or twice or three times during a concert?
Well, we had this past weekend, last night and Saturday night, we did a concert featuring the Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 2. And that calls for cymbals and bass drum in two brief sections of the third movement only. So they play for about 20 seconds twice, and that's the only thing they played in the concert. But we had to hire those guys to play because that's what Rachmaninoff wanted. So, yeah, that happens.
And why did you choose Rachmaninoff?
Wow, this is quite a story.
All right.
2 years ago, my wife and I went to the Mayo Clinic for a concert. Now, you know, most people don't go to the Mayo Clinic for a concert. But the Humanities and Medicine program there had invited a pianist from New York who is also a psychiatrist. And he's a world-class pianist and a world-class psychiatrist. And he was doing a recital of Beethoven. And he played three Beethoven piano sonatas, one from the early period, one from the middle, one from the late. And before each of them, he talked about Beethoven's state of mind, what was going on in his life, what led him to write these pieces the way he did. It was absolutely fascinating, and frankly, I'm not a fan of lecture recitals, usually, because either the lecture is really good and the recital is maybe not so good, or there's a great player, but I don't want to hear that person talk, I just want to hear that person play. But Dr. Richard Kogan from New York did both superlatively well, and right afterward I talked to him, and I said, could you possibly come and play with the symphony? He said, I'd love to. And he said, what would you want me to play? I said, well, Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto would be perfect, because Rachmaninoff, after the premiere of his first symphony, felt terrible. He was totally depressed. It was a disaster. The conductor was drunk and hadn't rehearsed it very well. The players hated it. The audience hated it. The critics killed it. One of the critics mentioned something about the seven plagues of Egypt, is what it brought. You think they're tough these days. In 1900, they were terrible in Moscow. Anyway, so he had such a disaster that he couldn't write. For 3 years, he didn't write a note of music. Then he went to a therapist who thought he could help him. After 4 months, he started composing again, and the piece he composed was the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto, and he dedicated it to Dr. Dahl, his therapist. And so Dr. Richard Kogan came out and talked about this and how this all happened and how the therapy took place before he played it with us yesterday, and the audience was totally mesmerized. And that's why we did Rachmaninoff.
Okay. And I knew he was from Russia.
Yes.
And for those of us that are not learned, you mentioned Beethoven.
Mm-hmm.
If I went dun-dun-dun-dun.
Perfect.
People would know that.
It wasn't quite in tune, but it was. You got the idea.
What? Okay, what would be, the point I'm doing that is, what would be Rachmaninoff's recognition?
Well, there was a song in the 1940s called Full Moon and Empty Arms. Frank Sinatra's and many other singers sang it, Ella Fitzgerald, and that came from the last movement of the concerto we did this weekend. And I will spare your listeners my voice trying to sing it.
Okay. And then how about the one that got, when I was a young man and you were not even born probably, well, maybe you were 2 or 3 years old, my cousins that were older than me, said, oh, you got to hear this, you got to hear this. And so we sat down, and we were, wait, you know, that's what I'm talking about.
No.
Okay. And then at the end, boom, boom.
Oh, the 1812 Overture with cannons.
Yes.
Well, I have to tell you a story about the 1812 Overture.
Please.
We had a fella in, maybe 20 years ago, to conduct the Rochester Symphony. His name is Keith Bryan. And Keith goes around the country. I think he's still doing it, though he's more your age than mine. But he plays John Philip Sousa, the great march king, Stars and Stripes Forever, Washington Post, Semper Fidelis, all those great marches. And he puts on the uniform and he conducts concerts as John Philip Sousa. And he speaks like him in a very clipped, reserved, quiet way. And I knew him when I was in graduate school. He was the band director, and I played occasionally to fill in when somebody was missing. Keith was a great guy. And then he started doing this, so I brought him to Rochester to do it, and he wanted to do the 1812 Overture. Well, in order to do the 1812 Overture, you need cannons. And we don't have cannons, but we do have shotguns in Rochester, Minnesota. So since I wasn't conducting it, I assigned to myself the job of playing the shotguns. And there are two series of shots. There's an early series and a late series. And I had a shotgun that had 6 shots, and I had another one that was a double barrel, okay? All 12-gauge. And I used blanks, by the way.
And it wasn't sawed off, was it?
No, okay. No. These were legal. These were legal guns.
Okay.
And I was backstage, and the idea is you shoot them into a big metal barrel. That sounds more like a cannon if you do that.
Okay.
So I'm backstage with earmuffs on to protect the sound, and I have to do my right on cue. And I didn't trust anybody else to do it. And between the first series and second series, I had to reload. And so I played shotgun. I played the cannons for the 1812 Overture when Keith conducted it. I couldn't really hear the music too well because I had these ear things on to protect it, but I got a certificate from the percussion section admitting me as an honorary percussionist because I played the cannons, the shotguns, for the 1812 Overture.
Which brings me to the jokes that I've read or have been told by musicians. How they tease everybody, and they say, what do you do with a shotgun and a tuba? You know, or, I don't know. But does that go on a lot where each section teases the other one as less important?
Constantly. Yes, yes. I mean, somebody says, for example, what's the range of a viola? Depends about how hard you kick it.
Stuff like that.
That sort of thing. Or I was about to conduct the St. Louis Symphony some years ago, and it's a big orchestra. I was a little nervous, and the piccolo player, believe it or not, piccolo player came up to me and said, Jerry, what's the difference between a shame and a crying shame? He said, I said, I don't know. I said, a shame is when a busload of conductors goes over a cliff. I said, well, then what's a crying shame? And Jan said, when there's 2 empty seats.
And that goes on as you travel, I suppose.
It does, definitely.
And do you travel a lot?
I used to. I had an agent in New York and would book me around the country conducting various different things. And so I traveled and conducted in a lot of different states and a lot of different orchestras. And I decided my kids were growing up. I didn't want to be away so much. And so I stuck with my Minnesota musical roots and didn't wander far afield and travel.
Well, speaking about traveling, we are going to travel to the part of the show that supports the idea. And I want to say our guests once again here on KYMN Radio. I'm very honored to have the conductor of the Rochester Symphony Orchestra in studio, Jerry Lance. And, of course, a shout-out to Brad Krabiel for bringing this gentleman in. And, Brad, we're going to get together and chit-chat about you. It's pretty nice that you said, hey, just talk to Jerry. I'm just here to keep him company. So we're going to take this break, and we'll be right back here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on the 195.1 FM.
Let us help you maximize your earnings with a certificate of deposit from Community Resource Bank. Invest in a 60-month CD at 2% or a 48-month at 1.75 annual percentage yield, or choose a 54-month bump option at 1.70% APY. Get the best deposit rates around with Community Resource Bank in Northfield, Cannon Falls, and Roseville. Good bankers, good friends. $25,000 minimum deposit required. Penalty for early withdrawal may reduce earnings. Other rates and terms are available. Member FDIC.
Your vehicle's engine warning light could mean something as simple as a loose gas cap or something serious and potentially expensive if you don't address it right away. Have our professional technicians at Witt Brothers Service diagnose and fix the problem as part of your overall preventative maintenance program. It could save you from costly problems down the road. Stop by Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for all of your automotive maintenance and repair needs.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Good Monday morning to you. I got to tell you that Lisa Gardner is a number one New York Times best-selling thriller novelist. She's Terry Knight's guest today with her latest Look for Me. This novel will grab you by the throat and by your heart for the start. In Look for Me, Gardner brings back two of her most compelling and complicated characters, fan favorite Sergeant Detective Dee Dee Warren and victim-turned-vigilante Flora Dane. Full of twists, Lisa keeps the suspense up. She talks about her process and research, and that interview will be at 11 o'clock this morning right here on 1080 and 95.1 with KYMN's own Terry Knight. Music from 1967 on the Wayne Eddy Affair.
Oh, I could hide.
Name this tune.
The bluebird as she sings.
It's a number two song of the year you graduated from high school.
Oh, Jerry. My goodness. I guess I was already buried in the music that I was doing and not listening to the. It's a little twangy for me.
You don't know it.
No, I don't.
Okay. How about you? No? Well, I'm going to tell you what it is, or they can tell you. Okay?
Right now?
Wake up, sleepy you.
Cheer up, yeah.
The Daydream Believer by the Monkees. You weren't a Monkee fan?
I was not particularly a Monkee fan. I saw their TV show once, and I said, I don't need that.
Yeah. I don't.
What was the name of one of those guys? It was Torkelson? Was that his name?
Yeah, one of them went to Carleton College.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wow, I don't know. That doesn't speak well for Carleton, does it?
I think he kind of, I don't know what the result, whether
they were one of those bands that went way up and then way down really quick. They weren't around very long.
Well, they do tours at casinos.
Do they still?
Yeah. Oh,
no,
yeah.
Kidding.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people your age that, obviously, at number two in all of 1967.
Well, I'll tell you what happened to me, Wayne. Back then, I think it was in 70 or 71, I was driving on the highway, and I heard the song come on there. They said, this is the top song in the nation. It was called Knock Three Times on the Ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
If You Want Me. And I said, if that's the number one song in the nation, I'm not listening to pop tunes anymore. And I
you
quit
know who
right
did that?
Then.
You remember?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, it's Tony Orlando and Dawn.
May they rest in peace.
It was pop music. Pop, you know. That, and you're into classical music.
I'm also into Broadway. I'm into jazz.
I like Broadway.
All sorts of different kinds of music. And when we do pops concerts, you know, we put all sorts of stuff on, and it's great. But I guess I'm not quite into the top 10 the way I was. If you had listed the top 10 songs from like 63, I'd probably know what they were, because when I was younger, I did.
Okay, I can do that.
No, it's all right.
63, that's more like my age, you know. Okay, so when you're conducting an orchestra, is there a first chair and a second chair and a third chair? Yep. How does that work? I've always wondered because I've heard people say, my son is in the first chair on his trombone or whatever.
Well, it depends on what section you're talking about.
Yes, sir.
If you're, for example, in a symphony orchestra, there are usually three trombones. There are two or three flutes. You know, there are small numbers of the winds and brass, and they are assigned by chair, and they have different parts, the first trombone part, second trombone part, third trombone part. Now, in the string section, because you need many more strings to play an individual part to match, to balance the larger sounding instruments like brass and woodwinds, so you'll have 6, 8, 10, 12 first violins and 6, 8, 10, 12 second violins. Of course, they are these jokes about efficiency experts and come and say, well, there's 12 people playing the same part. That's ridiculous. You know, then you don't need that many people. Well, you do to balance it. And within those sections, in many orchestras, they are specifically auditioned so that the best sit in the front, and as you go back, they don't play as well. I don't believe in that system. I believe in rotation. You mix them all up, and with each change of concert, so the people that are sitting in the front go to the back, and then each next concert they move up, okay? And so that sometime during the season they play at every part of their section, and it's more democratic. I think it works better that way.
Does it satiate egos?
Well, it prevents them from clashing.
Yeah, that's politics.
Well, yeah, exactly.
All right.
Yeah, we like each other.
What do you think my favorite instrument is? And I'll give you a hint. It's in the brass section.
Well, I mean, you mentioned trombone a minute ago, so I thought maybe that was it.
No, I like trombones. As a matter of fact, I bought, secondhand shops have clothes that hardly been worn. Well, you know the rest of the joke,
yes,
don't you?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know that joke?
No.
Tell them.
No, it's your joke.
And I tried it on, and I said, my goodness, I said, this left sleeve is right at the right place, but the other one comes down to my knuckles. What's the deal? Well, it used to be a trombone player's jacket. Did I tell it right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's it.
So what do you think my favorite horn is?
Trumpet. You mentioned tuba before. You love the tuba.
I love them all, but I am especially enamored by the French horn.
Oh.
And do you think, I like its sweet sound.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, remember, I don't know anything about music except I know when I like it.
Right.
Okay. Do you think maybe I was fatuated by the visual effect of the French horn?
The way the bell flares out like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's dramatic. It's also the kind of slipperiest of the brass instruments to play. And it involves technical way it's structured about the harmonic overtone series and the integral multiples of a fundamental frequency and all sorts of stuff like that. But it means the notes are really tight together. If you don't have your chop set just right, you slip. You hear more of those kind of sounds coming out of the horn when they don't quite get the right note, but they slip into the right note. You hear that more out of the French horn than any other instrument. By the way, French horn is a misnomer, just so you know. The instrument came from Germany. Nobody really knows why it's called the French horn, but in orchestra parlance, if you say French horn, they know you're not really an orchestra person. If you just call it horn, then you know. And if you say, which horn do you mean, the trumpet, then you're not an orchestra person. There's only one horn, and that's what is usually called the French horn. The trumpet, trombone, and tuba are not horns. They're trumpet, trombone, and tuba. They're brass. So you're getting the nomenclature straight so you can sound much more sophisticated the next time you hang around with orchestra people.
Well, and we have a lot of them here, and I've had many of them on my show, and it's way over my head. And we have another show on Fridays and Saturdays, and she has people in that are musicians.
Sure.
And I have people come in. Last Thursday I had a four-piece band right here in the studio.
Wow.
And they were singing songs like Amy. What you gonna, remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, I love the music. I just am not educated about it. So that's why I ask these questions that are probably pretty basic and simple, and I figured out why they call it a French horn.
Tell me.
Well, as you know, the French and the Germans haven't been comfortable with each other for
centuries.
Yes. And I think what happened is that Germany at one time dominated France, and that particular instrument, which goes off tune every once in a while, the Germans didn't want to be responsible for that. So they called it a French horn, so that the French people would have to assume the responsibility of going off.
It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, that
and by the way, your kind of music lover is exactly the kind that we in the symphony orchestra world really treasure. We don't need people coming to concerts who know everything. We just like people coming who love music. If you love music, that's qualification. And I understand there are places and there are people who are intimidated by the idea of going to a symphony concert. There's no reason to be intimidated. Oh, wear your jeans if you want. Just come and enjoy the music. We try to give a lot of variety so everybody will like something on the program. And we like to give it a lot of personality and depth and relate it personally. That's why we had, as I mentioned earlier, this psychiatrist from New York talking about Rachmaninoff over the weekend and how he had to go into therapy to renew his composition career. And that fascinates people. The human, the story behind the music, the people who make the music. That's kind of fun. And people don't have to be shy about it at all. It's just fun.
Are you a fan of Rimsky-Korsakov?
Of Korsakov I am.
What does that mean?
Of course, a cough I am. Yes.
I get it. Whoa! Sorry.
You just let me, I've heard these names so much. Yes, I like Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov wrote beautiful music. Yes, he did.
Mendelssohn?
Mendelssohn is wonderful. He was born 3 days before me.
Really?
Well, 3 days and 140 years.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. What? Okay, simple questions. There's a movie that came out probably in the 70s, and it was about a Beethoven or somebody, and I can't remember the name of the movie, but it was about...
But you're talking about Amadeus, which was about Mozart.
Yes.
It was filmed in Czechoslovakia, yes.
That movie...
Stunning.
...was, number one, funny...
Yes.
Number two, serious.
Yes.
And number three, beautiful music.
Absolutely. If you get Mozart to write your film score, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, okay. And do you know, and I'm sure you do, that the Beatles, for example,
mm-hmm.
and other performers do go and find and kind of steal some of the written music from centuries before?
Of course they do. They've got great taste and they've got great knowledge, and that's a great idea. Beatles are spectacular musicians. Many have gone and done that, and it's worked out really well for the old musicians and the new ones.
Can you think of any popular song from a popular performer that you listen to it on the radio, let's say, and you go, oh, that's from whatever?
Well, there's Tonight We Love, which came from a Tchaikovsky concerto years ago. There's Full Moon and Empty Arms, I mentioned earlier, from the Rachmaninoff concerto. There's I'm Always Chasing Rainbows, which is from the Fantasy Impromptu by Chopin. There's a lot of those tunes that have, or and sometimes they're stolen. Hot Diggity Dog Diggity. It's from a piece called Espana by Emmanuel Chabrier.
Oh, I'm glad you told us that. Do you ever have anybody do the... I had a violinist in here the other couple of weeks ago, and I asked her if she could play the Hot Canary, and she never had heard of the Hot Canary, so I found it on the computer and played a little bit of that. Do you ever have a violinist do of that fun stuff?
Well, you know,
what I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay. And I, I don't think we have done that. At all. We've pretty much stuck with the concertos, but I do have a lot of fun making music in all sorts of ways and in all sorts of genres, and sometimes I write arrangements to make things work. I mean, I did, for example, at Christmas time, I wrote an arrangement of Jingle Bells. And what would happen if Jingle Bells came up at Handel's time? You know, George Frederick Handel. And I did some of the water music of George Frederick Handel, but it sounded like Jingle Bells. And then if it came up Mozart's time, I did a piece called Eine kleine Nachtmusik, a little night music of Mozart. Very familiar piece, but all of a sudden it has Jingle Bells in it. And then I did the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto with Jingle Bells, and I did Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring from the early 20th century, a riotous piece, and somehow Jingle Bells was in that too. So we put Jingle Bells into, because it was Christmas time, into all these great composers, and it was a lot of fun.
What were the people saying, oh, how are they, once you start the third one, do they say? Now, how are they going to incorporate jingle bells in this particular
They're trying to figure it out because they got the idea. Now saying, well, I'm going to see what happens here. But the wildest one was Stravinsky, because it doesn't sound like any particular key or melody, but somehow jingle bells was in it. When I think of it, I read this arrangement some years back, and when I think about it now, I think, I could never think that up now. I must have been smart when I was young, because I could not do it today.
Well, I understand we have to take a break, and so we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking to the conductor of the Rochester Symphony Orchestra, Jerry Lance, and thanks to, I imagine you are a patron, aren't you, Brett?
I am a patron.
And a board member, too.
And a board member.
Oh, you're... Wheeled him. That's good.
He's my boss.
All right. And what business do you run, sir?
Home Federal Savings Bank in Rochester, Minnesota.
All right. We'll take a break, and we'll be right back with the joy of these two gentlemen right after this important time out.
Getting new furniture sounds fun. Shopping for furniture, not so much. High-pressure sales leave you wanting to get out of the store as quick as possible, which can mean bringing home furniture that's not right for you, or nothing at all. Not at America's Mattress and Furniture To Go in Dundas. Our low-pressure salespeople are there to help, but allow you to browse for as long as you need to find the right furniture or mattress for you. Stop into America's Mattress and Furniture To Go in Dundas and see how relaxing furniture shopping can be.
Dennis Kirk brings you the 31st Annual Donnie Smith Bike and Car Show, presented by Geico, Lucas Oil, Russ Brown, Indian Motorcycle, and Sturgis Buffalo Chip. This is Zep, and I'm coming home for this one. Join me Saturday and Sunday, March 24th and 25th at the St. Paul River Center. Don't forget about the Swap Meet Tattoo Expo, and join me for the Budweiser Happy Hour Saturday night featuring Corey Stevens live. More info at DonnieSmithBikeShow.com. The party really gets started Friday night, March 23rd. It's the thrills and spills of indoor flat track racing at the state fairgrounds, 6 to 10 Friday night, March 23rd. Sponsored by Dennis Kirk, Geico, Sturgis Buffalo Chip, Russ Brown, Lucas Oil, and S&S Cycle. IndoorFlatTrackRacing.com.
And take your adventures off-road at the Outdoor Life Expo, March 24th and 25th in Warner Coliseum at the State Fairgrounds, featuring all the latest in four-wheelers, ATVs, UTVs. Admission is just $12 for adults. Children under 12 are free. OutdoorLifeExpo.com.
You know that it would be untrue. Name this tune.
You know that I would be a The Doors. Liar.
Pardon me?
The Doors. If I was to say to you, come on, baby, light my fire.
You got it.
Girl, we couldn't get
much higher. I like this song.
Me too.
It's a goodie.
All the guys that are driving right now are singing it with a come on, baby, light my fire. Our guest this morning on KYMN Radio knows a lot about music, and this is a community that has a lot of people that are musicians and conductors. Our guest is conductor Jerry Lance from Rochester Symphony Orchestra. He has a long title. You're, I imagine, a 501c...
501c3, not-for-profit organization. We are.
Now, being the president and the CEO, does that mean that you have to go out and get those sponsors, those patrons?
Absolutely, yes, sir.
And would you rather just do music instead of all of...
There are days like that. Yeah, there are. There's no question about it. And I frankly feel much more comfortable doing the music than I do doing the asking.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, that's an important part of what's... It's what we're about. Now, I have to say that the model of having the same person be in charge of the artistry and in charge of the organization is not a model that's approved by the League of American Orchestras. In fact, when I saw Jesse Rosen, who is the head of that organization in New York, I said, Jesse, you'll never guess what I do now. And I told him, he said, you know, we don't approve that model. I said, no, you don't. But we're just going to do this for a while and see how it goes. And a friend of mine was going out to play with the Detroit Symphony. An old friend of mine, Leonard Slatkin, directs that orchestra. And I said, Tom, say hi to Leonard for me and tell him what I'm up to now. And Tom said to Leonard that I was being, you know, the executive as well as the artistic director. And Leonard looked at Tom and said, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
When you said that the place you were, what was the name of the association?
Oh, the League of American Orchestras.
Okay. And when they say we don't appreciate that, you can do it and still be a member.
Oh, you can. Oh, yes, but they don't
approve of it.
They don't recommend it. And frankly, when I'm done and I leave, I don't recommend it anymore.
Okay. And how long you've been there since 1980?
1980, shaking the stick. But
shaking the stick, okay.
But
I wander. Never mind. Go for it, Jerry.
Thank you. But I've just been doing the president CEO part for 2.5 years now. Started in September of 15. Yeah.
All right. And do you have a favorite section as a conductor, or is that something you don't say?
Well, I don't say as a conductor, but my wife's a violinist.
Excuse me. That's good. We have violin makers in this town.
I know. And yes. Daniel's one of them. Yeah, they're good. They're good.
And I just think it's great how we can associate you and I, because tomorrow I'm going to go to Rochester.
Hey, they're going to let you in?
I am. I'm going to see your friend Brad.
Brandon.
Brandon Sampson.
Yes.
Yeah. He is good.
Oh, he's a wonderful musician. Yeah. Great guy.
You know who that guy is to your right?
Oh, Mr. James?
Yes, that's Jesse James. He is like 8 feet or more tall, made out of a piece of tree, done to raise money for the Northfield Historical Society.
That's a great carving. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I love it.
And I was bidding on it, and somebody behind me was silent bidding, you know, the nod of the head.
Sure.
And I was watching the auctioneer, and I'm saying, I'll do this, and he'd get that money, and finally it turned around. It's Jeff Johnson, the guy, my boss, the guy that owns the station.
You were bidding each other up to get it in the studio.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a donation, right?
Yep.
And I thought, I'm glad Jeff got it. I quit.
Sure.
And he got what I think is a hell of a deal. And it's perfect in here.
It is. It is.
Where would I put that in my house, you know, that... So anyhow, you had you indicated that back in Pennsylvania, you knew about Jesse James in Northfield or something?
Well, when I was growing up, westerns were all the deal. I mean, half the shows on TV when I was growing up were westerns. You know, we had Cheyenne and Sugarfoot and Maverick, and, you know, you could name them forever and ever. And we knew all the songs, you know, it was great. And so I knew, the comic books we read, and we pretended to play cowboys and all that kind of stuff. And I heard about Jesse James and Northfield and the great, you know, route that the gang ran into here, because the Northfield people, that's why I'm always nice to people in Northfield. If they're tougher than Jesse James, I better be nice. I better be nice around Northfield.
Good line, good line.
The funny thing that I heard when I was studying music, I was studying the music of Aaron Copland, great American composer, New Yorker. It turned out that he was the son of immigrants who came over from the Russian area. And when his grandfather came over, he settled in New York for a little while, but then he decided to go west to seek his fortune. And he ended up finally in a town in Texas where he was running a general store and bringing up his daughter, who was to be Copeland's mother years later. And he hired to work behind the counter at his general store a man who had recently gotten out of prison and was going straight. Now, you understand, this is at the end of the 19th century, and I mean like 1880s, 90s, and the guy's name was Frank James, older guy, who was the older brother of Jesse, and who was here, you know, in Northfield, but didn't get killed by a friend of his, as Jesse did, and was trying to go on and have a successful life, and the grandfather was advised, do not hire this guy. This is Frank James. You know about Frank James? Well, he didn't really know about Frank James. He was from Russia. He wasn't from Texas. So he hired him, and it turned out it brought a lot of people into the store. They didn't necessarily buy things, but everyone wanted to see Frank James, you know, because there he was. And so it was working out very well. And then one morning he came to work, and the till had been cleaned out. Frank James was gone from town, and he was out of money, so he moved back to New York. And that's why Aaron Copland was born in New York, not in Texas, because Frank James cleaned out his grandfather.
That is a story I have never heard before. And I've heard 100,000 stories. I used to ride with the gang for over 25 years. Don't do it now. Mm-hmm. I'd love to. It's
sure.
a thrill.
Of course.
And I played the role of Frank James.
Wow.
He's the one that killed Joseph Lee Haywood, who we honor because of his bravery in refusing to open the vault, because back in those days there was no FDICA or whatever it's called. And if they got the money, it would hurt the retailers, the farmers, the churches, the
wow.
colleges, because it was the only bank in town, I believe. So Joseph Lee Haywood did a wonderful thing. Frank James is the one that shot and killed him, but I never heard that story.
It was 1876 right here.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the reason I heard it is I read it in a book called Copeland Remembers. And it was written by Vivian Perlis. And what she did is she sat down with Aaron Copeland when he was an older guy and asked him to remember things. And she taped it and created what's called oral history out of it. And that was the beginnings of oral history in classical music. And I knew Vivian. She was a harp player when I was in a college orchestra. She was an older woman who came in to play harp with us because there was nobody, you know, no kid, no student who would play the harp who knew how. And so I got to know Vivian, and she created these books about Copeland, and I read the books, and he tells the story about Frank James and his grandfather.
That is interesting. That really, truly is very interesting. We do know that he did join another big Western name. Well, Buffalo Bill, maybe, and did Western shows.
With Buffalo Bill? I didn't know that, yeah.
If that's not right, there's some other big name that did it. But anyhow, he's quite the bad guy.
Yeah, Wayne, I'll give you one of my... Talking about Buffalo Bill and William Cody and all that, he was known early on when he was a teenager. He rode on the Pony Express. He was one of the Pony Express riders before he became the great buffalo hunter and then did the show. And what's interesting is most people don't know how long the Pony Express lasted. How many years did it? It lasted for 16 to 18 months. That was it. Because then the telegraph went through and they were out of business.
Yeah.
And they got lots of publicity for that time, but it hardly existed at all. It was a very brief duration.
Well, they had it, I think, during President Lincoln's term.
That's right,
term.
Early, 61, 62.
Yeah, yeah. And use that to go out and find that theater guy, Booth.
Yes.
Bad guy.
Not a good fellow.
No.
You can't trust those actors. You just can't trust them.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, my guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair, thanks to a fellow by the name of Brad Crabio, and he is a banker from Rochester, 16 locations now, and he has brought conductor Jerry Lance here. And just briefly, let me ask you, if I may, when you emailed me or texted me, I get them mixed up, and we got in touch, and you said that you listened to the Wayne Eddy Affair. And so do you go across the dial just to see what's up and what people are talking about?
Well, Wayne, I'm a fan of AM radio, and I spend a lot of time in my car between our branches and the different markets that we're in. And so I really appreciate local radio. Because as you know now, if you dial either on the FM or the AM band, a lot of that, what you hear now, is syndicated radio that has nothing to do with our individual marketplaces. And that's why I'm in community banking, because in a community bank, you get to know your communities that you're in, and you're interested in the people who are doing business with you. And so when I go in my car, I tend to turn on the AM band, and I will find the local radio stations, and that's how I happened upon you, and that's probably 10, 15 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And so whenever I'm in the area and I can pick up your signal, you're the guy I listen to. And now with new technology, I can go to our cabin up in Detroit Lakes, and I can find KYMN on TuneIn Radio on my cell phone, and I can stream that in my car and listen to you just like it was FM.
Isn't that
so? So my wife has listened to you too, and she just thinks it's a riot. She loves listening to you, and when I heard your interview skills and the types of guests that you had on, and then after getting to know Jerry, I think it was probably 2 years ago, I told Jerry, there's this radio station, we got to get you on, because just the way Jerry's answering your questions today, Wayne, that's the way he interacts with the people who are attending the symphony orchestra presentations. And so it's fantastic. I mean, he personalizes the stories. He'll tell you about the piece they're going to play, and it's riveting for the people who are there. So I'd highly recommend anybody from the area here to, if you're in the Rochester area, or just take a drive over. You know, it's not that far. It's 1 hour. And you can see one of the it's the only professional orchestra outside the Twin Cities, is that correct?
Yeah, in southern Minnesota, that's true. Yep.
Wow, you could be a radio announcer. You did a heck of a nice job.
Well.
I have a question. And this question I don't think I've asked since I first started in Tomah, Wisconsin 51 years ago. Or no, gosh, it's more than that, 54. Do I look like I sounded?
You sound like you have more hair. As I watch you I'm just marveled at what experience will do for somebody like you. You know, and how many years have you been doing this?
1964, so 54 years.
Yeah.
So I just wondered because I remember my first radio job. There was a beauty shop below, and we were on the second floor. And I had to go in there for something, and this gal says, "Oh, are you wearing that in?" I said, "Yeah." "Oh, we were wondering what you looked like." And I thought, you know what? I've thought of that, too. What do these people look like that are on the radio? I was raised on Twin City Radio, and so...
So you knew what Charlie Boone looked like.
Yeah,
Charlie Boone was my first guest when I started doing this
show.
Was
he really? No kidding.
Wow.
And Charlie, I was on a couple times with Charlie on CCO. Nice, nice guy.
Yeah, he passed away.
Yes, sad.
And I had Roger Erickson.
Sure, Roger was great.
And he can't talk. He's got, what do we call it, dementia.
Right.
I think I'm getting there. We have to take a break for the news, all right?
Very good.
We'll be back on the Wayne Eddy Affair in just a couple of minutes on KYMN, 1080 AM for almost 50 years. And, of course, the one, KYMN FM 95.1.
Two victims of Austin's fourth bomb, GOP reaction to McCabe firing. I'm Evan Haining. When three recent package bombs were opened in Austin, Texas, they exploded, killing two people and injuring two others. Well, now there's been another explosion, but this time no one had touched the bomb.
Austin Police Chief Brian Manley says the device used in last night's explosion was different.
It is very possible that this device was a device that was activated by someone either handling, kicking, or coming in contact with a tripwire that activated the device.
Police are acting as if all four explosions are related until learning otherwise. A city being asked to steer clear of any suspicious objects. I'm Clayton Neville.
Well, the first three bombs' victims were black. The two injured last night were white. Police think it's possible the package bombs had targeted African Americans. Austin Mayor Steve Adler says the incidents have law enforcement's full attention.
An army of investigators out on the scene. Over 100.
In Kentucky, four people have been injured after two trains collided and derailed.
Those living near the scene in Georgetown, Kentucky, just north of Lexington, were evacuated out of an abundance of caution because something spilled after the collision that apparently began burning. The fire has been extinguished. What spilled from the train has not been confirmed. But officials say once they determined there was no safety risk, they allowed residents to return home.
Correspondent Scott Carr. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham wants the Judiciary Committee to hold a hearing for Attorney General Jeff Sessions to explain the dismissal of FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, who was fired Friday, 2 days before he was to retire and get his full pension. It's been off most of our radar recently, but correspondent Tom Busby reminds us we are facing another government funding deadline.
Congress hard at work today trying to wrap up a new federal spending bill to keep the government open past this Friday's deadline.
Right now, the Dow is down about 180 points. I'm Evan Haining.
Back live and in color from our studios in beautiful downtown, historical downtown Northfield, Minnesota, on Division Street, the main drag. We're at 2nd, right across the street from the library and next door to the famous Archer House. How about that? My theme song, You are, you know, I'm playing music from the year you graduated, and you don't know it. did you recognize that song?
Absolutely. See, I grew up with the Beatles.
Okay.
I mean, I was very aware when they first came around the Ed Sullivan Show, and I saw them, and, you know, all that. It was so exciting. It was so neat. And when these guys were such variety. I mean, that style is not rock and roll. It's kind of like a funky old jazz, little Dixieland system. When I'm 64, is just, you know, it's such, and they could change their style so wonderfully and make it work in so many different ways. I mean, Hey Jude is still one of my very favorites, and Yesterday may be the most recorded song in history. You know, it's, I mean,
I think I have to agree with you. And Michelle is another one.
Oh, Michelle. Yeah. I'm an old romantic, and all those songs really get to me. Yeah.
Well, the name of that song,
When I'm 64.
And the reason I use it as a theme song is...
Because you can remember when you were 64.
Well, okay. I started in the business in 1964.
In 64. Very good.
And then I started doing this show when I was 64. So why not? And did you know it was Paul McCartney's dad that was playing the clarinet on that?
Did not know that.
Every time you hear that song, now it's going to pop in your head. And you say, hey, that's Paul McCartney's dad.
And when he talks about... Mother Mary comes to me, and that's his mother he's talking. He's not a religious figure. Yeah. It's his own mother he's talking about in Let It Be. Yeah.
And we are in conversation here with a couple of neat people, and Brad Crabiel is here. He's a bigwig with Home Finance, got 16 locations. I keep throwing out, you know, a little bit for you because...
Thanks, Wayne.
I appreciate you bringing our guest, who is Jerry Lance, J-E-R-E, Jerry Lance. And we have something in common. My prosthetist and he have been performed together at all, Brandon Sampson?
Yeah, we did. We were doing a fundraiser for Ronald McDonald House in Rochester.
Okay.
And we did some a couple of Beatles albums.
Wow.
Over 50 anniversary. And it was great. We had a great time, and Brandon's a wonderful singer. And there were all sorts of musicians from the Twin Cities, but the one guy from the... One of the guys from Rochester was Brandon.
I know he sings, and he writes his own music. But what song did he do?
I'm trying to remember now.
Yeah.
There were
That's the name of it? I'm trying to remember?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember.
But you remember the song, Try to Remember?
Try. That one I do.
Yeah.
Try to Remember. That wasn't it, though, was it?
No, it wasn't.
No, okay.
Not a Beatles song.
Tell me, Jerry, when you're up on that stand, do you sweat?
Well, a lot.
Because that is physical, isn't it?
It is. Let me tell you something.
I'm listening.
It is wonderful cardiac exercise. In fact, I read it to a book a few years ago called The Conductor's Secret to a Long Life by Dr. Dale Anderson. I thought, well, this is interesting. So I got... It's one of those books with a lot of drawings in. So it could have been done in a long magazine article, but, you know, with all the drawings in and they only have a few words per page and all that, they turned it into a book. Very amusing. And basically it says that... Conducting is aerobic exercise without the impact. You don't need to have the jogging and all that and hurting on your joints, but if you conduct, put your favorite hot piece of music on and pretend you're conducting it and really let it all out, and you do that for a few minutes, it's great aerobic exercise. So I had that book, and then I was directing the church choir, one of the other jobs. I, you know, do a bunch of musical things in addition to the Rochester Symphony. Directing the church choir at Westminster Presbyterian in downtown Minneapolis.
Ooh.
And Annie, one of the gals... in the soprano section, came up to me and with a copy of the book, and she wanted to give it to me. I said, Annie, thank you. I really appreciate it, but I have a copy of that book next to my bed at home. I don't really need another copy. And she said, well, do you have a copy that's inscribed to you by the author? I said, no. I said, well, here's one. I said, how do you know him? She said, I married him.
Oh, for God's sakes.
And Dale Anderson turned out to be Annie's husband, and I'd gotten to know Dale and Annie very well. Dale is known as the Happy Doc. He'd love to come on your show sometime.
I'd love to have
him. He's older than thou. And he has all sorts of tricks to how to live a wonderful life, and I'll just tell you one. If you want to know if you're standing up straight, take 3 steps backwards. You can't walk backwards without standing up straight. And you'll discover you're standing straighter than when you thought you were standing up straight. Just walk backwards 3 steps. You'll know if you're... up straight or not.
Well, of course, a very, very revered late pop artist did the moonwalk.
Amen. Well, I don't know how he did that. I think he faked the whole thing.
You know,
nobody can move that smooth. Nobody can move that smooth.
I have actually stopped it on the TV and rewind and then had it on slow motion, how he did that. I still
You still can't figure it out.
I can't. I can't do it.
And right. Michael Jackson could move, no question.
He was fabulous.
Yep.
I think he. I'm sorry that like Bob Dylan. I don't enjoy Bob Dylan. I know he's a poet, a messenger.
Won the Nobel Prize, Wayne.
Well, he knew enough to not accept it.
No,
he ended up taking
it. Yeah, he gave an address, too. Yeah, I've read part of it.
But, I mean,
Robert Zimmerman from Minnesota?
Well, okay,
good
here's
guy.
A story.
Right.
A woman that turned 100. I was interviewing her when she turned 99.
Hmm.
And I said, you got to come back when you're 100. And she came back. 101, 102, 103, 104, 105. I'd have her come in and we'd chit-chat for an hour.
Sure.
She raised her kids next door to the Zimmerman's and was good friends with the family.
Hmm.
And Bob Dylan was part of that neighborhood clique. So she knew him real well.
Sure. I'll tell you a story you'd love to hear. This was in maybe 2010, 2011 or something like that. I got a call from somebody at the Mayo Clinic down in Rochester, and they said, hey, would you like to have dinner tomorrow night with Andy Williams? I said, sure. He said, well, he's in for his annual checkup, and he would like to do some sort of musical fundraiser here in Rochester for the clinic because he's very big fan of the clinic, went there all his life for medical care. And he'd like to have the symphony involved. I said, well, let's do it. So we went to a restaurant that now no longer exists in Rochester.
Michael's?
No. It's right on the corner where Grand Rounds Brewery is now and where Wong's used to be. And there was a place there in between. And it was...
Tapas.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
It's a Tapas restaurant. Thank you, Brad. And so there was a table there. We were the only ones there. And on one side of the table was Andy Williams and his wife and some people from the Mayo Clinic. On the other side, I was there and a couple other people from the symphony. And so I'm sitting directly across from Andy Williams because we're the people who are supposed to be talking about this. And I said, hey, this was in December. I said, I heard you singing the other day. He said, well, what was that? I said, well, I heard you singing Most Wonderful Time of the Year. He said, oh, was that in an elevator? I said, no, it was in a department store. He said, well, you know, they do that all the time. He's like saying that he's kind of tired of it. I said, listen, when people want to hear Over the Rainbow, they want to hear Judy do it. And when they hear White Christmas, they want to hear Bing do it. And when they hear Most Wonderful Time of the Year, they want to hear you do it. Nobody else. And as long as they play music at Christmas time, they'll be playing your Most Wonderful Time of the Year. And he smiled, and his wife, Debbie, who was a sweetheart, was clearly very happy. I said, but I've got a question I've got to ask you. I said, in 1944, did you? He said, yes, I did. He said, it's true. I said, really? He said, yeah. And it's my favorite bit of film trivia. So I said, all right, now let me get it straight. They were making a movie called To Have and Have Not from a novel by Ernest Hemingway with script written, believe it or not, by his competitor as a writer, William Faulkner. And frankly, I thought the script was better than the book, but okay. Starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. It's the movie on which they met. He was 42, Humphrey Bogart. Lauren Bacall was 19. And, of course, later they got married, had kids, had a wonderful family and all that kind of thing. And there's a place in the movie, this wonderful moment in the movie, where she calls him Steve in the movie, even though his character's name is not Steve. He says, you look like a Steve. I'm going to call you Steve. And she says to him, if you need anything, just whistle. You do know how to whistle, don't you? Just put your lips together and blow. And Faulkner had written this line. It's not in Hemingway's book. Anyway, so there's a couple scenes in which she sings songs. She's in a bar, and Hoagie Carmichael, the great composer of Stardust and other things, you know, is the pianist, and she sings along with him. They didn't like her voice. They wanted to have somebody else sing for Lauren Bacall in this 1944 movie, and they hired a 14-year-old kid named Andy Williams to be the voice for Lauren Bacall, a guy. And you ask anybody that who sang the voice, who was hired to sing the voice for Lauren Bacall in 1944 movie To Have and Have Not, nobody will think of Andy Williams. Well, Judy Garland, you know,
yeah,
Rosie Clooney,
yeah, yeah.
You know, all those things, but nobody would have thought, okay, And it turned out they decided not to do that. They decided not to use Andy's recording, but to use actually Lauren Bacall's voice. So that's the voice you hear in the movie. And I said to Andy Williams, I said, now, I hope that Warner Brothers still has those tapes. He said, no, they don't. I got them.
Oh, cool.
So he had his own tapes that he recorded. He said he went in there and they put... They closed in, did a close-up on the mouth, so the mouth filled the entire screen. He sang all day, singing the songs over again, so it was precisely recorded with them, and he had the tapes before he passed, but he passed before we could ever get that show together. But it was fun to talk to Andy and to hear those stories and have that authenticated, because when I heard that bit of movie trivia, I thought, maybe that's not true. But I got it from the Andy Williams mouth, so there you go.
Right from the mouth of Andy Williams, and it was the most wonderful time of the year, when he did that.
Absolutely.
In December.
Yes. Yep.
Do you have a opportunity to hit up, for lack of being politically correct, people like Andy Williams that have money to say, you know what, because you always need money no matter what.
Yes. Well, actually, let me tell you the truth, Wayne. I got a few months ago, I got a survey from a group of trying to find out how arts organizations could be helped. And they sent me a survey. What are the three things that you can most use to improve your arts organization? I said, number one, money. Number two, money. And number three, you can guess what that is, because that's what it is. I know how to make the music. I know how to find musicians. I know how to find music. I know how to find halls and all that kind of stuff. We just need the support for it. That's all.
Yeah. So you constantly have your hand out, you know.
It's true.
Hopefully working with people that have their heart out to give. And I'm just wondering if you ever had, let's say, somebody from Saudi Arabia or one of those Middle East countries that have a contingent of people with them no matter where they go. If they come to the symphony and then you have a pass the hat or some way to ask the patrons to keep supporting you that they might throw in $50,000.
Well, that would be nice, and one always hopes for that. However, recently we did have a donor who organization that has to be kept anonymous.
Yes,
was kind enough to propose to us when we were asking and said, we instead of giving you money directly, what we would like to do is give you a matching grant, but we'll make it a double match so that for every new dollar, not just if somebody gives what they've given before. Nuh-uh. But if it's money from a new person or it's an additional gift from someone who has given before, then we will double match it.
Wow.
And if you raise $25,000, we'll give you $50,000. And I announced that at our concert in November. And we sent out our holiday appeal with that as part of it. And normally we get 10, 12, 13,000 for our holiday appeal. And during that part of the year, we got close to $40,000.
Wow.
Because one music lover who was there simply sent us a check for $5,000 the next week. He said, you guys deserve it. You're doing a great job. I haven't been going to the symphony before. I've been living here for a few years in Rochester, but I love it. Sent us a check for $5,000, and that turned into $15,000 with a double match. And so that kind of thing has been very helpful. And this donor is going to continue this for a total of 3 years. But next year we have to raise $25,000. New dollar. It's harder the second year.
Yep.
And the third year, it's going to be still harder.
Okay.
And then we want to retain those gifts. So in the end, we net with close to $75,000 in new contributions annually. Our budget is over $600,000 for the Rochester Symphony.
How much?
$630,000.
Wow. Yeah. I'm on the board of directors for the Pavick Museum of Broadcasting in St. Louis Park.
Oh, I've been there.
Good. Did you like that?
It's great. It's great. And
how long ago?
About 3-4 years ago.
It's different. We went through a big remodeling period.
Wow.
Yeah. I was chairman of the board at that for 7 years.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the nice
it's
things
in that industrial area, you're surprised that there's a museum in there, you know.
When I was chairman, we were renting that place. And I said, we got to raise some funds and buy this place. And we did. And we did some remodeling. But we had a wonderful patron, and I will even tell you who it is, has one of the biggest companies in Minnesota. Can you think of a big Minnesota corporation that does worldwide business.
Medtronic?
Yes.
Wow.
Earl Bakken.
Of course.
And his son Jeff now is the chairman. And, you know, we do fundraising, and I don't think we are as aggressive as we should be. So after we get done with the show, you can give me the name of that guy, and maybe he'll make the same challenge. I mean, if they got a lot of, yes, you have. You have, too. Dreamt of winning the lottery.
Sure,
of course.
And what you would do with that money. At my age, what am I going to do? I'm not going to build five different. I'm going to give it away.
Leave a legacy.
Half of it for my wife, of course. But I think it would be great to be able to hand somebody like you $5,000 because it means so much to you. And if they're millionaires, yeah, it's no big deal.
It's true, and if I would certainly make a big endowment for the Rochester Symphony. I look for other organizations, too, if I won the lottery. Absolutely.
I was called to Mr. Bakken's office and in their campus, and I'm going, wow, this place is really big. And, of course, they do a lot of business in Rochester. And the office that you get to and the security and all that stuff, and finally we end up in his office, and he's diabetic and I'm diabetic, and he offered a cookie and coffee, whatever else you want, and somebody brought it, and I'm going, what does this man want? And so he basically was checking me out to see if he felt that I could do the job as chairman.
Sure.
And I was pretty naive at the time because it was a done deal. He said, I hope you do well, and I think you will do well, and all that. And to help you, I'm going to donate $1 million.
Hmm.
And I went, wow. What do you do with a bank account with $1 million in it? Well, he said, I will do it at $100,000 a year for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. You know, that took care of our employees at that time. And you look and hope that you can find another person that can leave a legacy like he has his own museum, the Bakken Museum.
Bakken Museum, of course.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
So your job as a conductor is in awe by fans and other people. And to go out and ask after they've been to a concert,
mm-hmm.
they look at you and they say, wow, you're really good. And you need the money, and you explained it to me, and I'm going to help. Did you ever get a big turndown?
We've gotten turndowns, yes. And what usually happens is that we get something, but we don't get as much as we had hoped for. But people are usually very nice about it. And other people say, well, there are these needs in the community, too,
yep.
and I support these, and I hope you have luck supporting yours. But people are always very nice and very understanding, and we've tried to make our concerts more connected with, for example, next month in April, we're doing a concert called MLK and the American Dream. I think it's not on people's radar that April 4th coming up is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And you remember it, and I remember it very well. A very sad occasion and something that brought to focus a whole movement in American political, social life. And so we're going to be doing a concert that expresses that, does a lot of spirituals, does the Lincoln portrait by Copeland. There's a new piece called Legacy of Vision, MLK, which was written in 1999 at the behest of a friend of mine, another conductor, who commissioned it. And the composer is coming, and that is has the I Have a Dream, part of the I Have a Dream speech in it, that sort of thing. And we're trying to reach out in the community and get people involved. And actually, there's a new song being written for Rochester. People from Rochester in a program called Statecraft have created a song. Torres Hodges, a young man from Rochester, led the project. And we're going to present that song for the first time at that concert. And we want to relate in that sense. And even the one we did this weekend where we had a psychiatrist come and talk about overcoming problems and being an artist, that relates to community as well. In the fall, turns out that 2018 is the 200th anniversary of the publication of Frankenstein. in 1818. So we're going to do a concert in, we haven't announced this to the public, but we're going to do a concert in October based on Frankenstein.
Are you going to use the score from any of their movies?
We're checking into that.
Okay.
We're checking into that. And we're having a new piece written for us, a Frankenstein piece written by a composer in Rochester. In November, it's the 100th anniversary of Armistice Day, the end of World War One, the original 11-11. And we're going to do a program based on that, a tribute to veterans, as well as remembering music and times that were going on back there during the First World War. And it's not that we still aren't going to play, you know, Beethoven and Brahms and Mahler and all that sort of stuff. We are, but we have other things that are going on in the concerts.
Are you going to get over there into the construction?
That's an interesting point. George M. Cohan's great song. Love that song. Over there would be a great one there. Yeah.
Well, when I talk to people like Brandon, for example, who writes his own music,
yes,
and that's what they want to present, is their writings and scoring. And I always say, play something that I can recognize,
mm-hmm,
and that will give me the opportunity to know that you know what you're doing. Even if it's your own arrangement, do something that people can be familiar with, and then get on with your originals, because now we know you truly are a good singer, musician, whatever.
That's a very, very good point, Wayne, because, for example, the concert we did over this last weekend, we did a piece at the beginning called Prelude to Akhenaten by Philip Glass, which is music that a lot of people will listen to it and say, I don't know if they did it well or if they didn't, because I never heard anything like that before. It doesn't, you know, flow the way music I'm used to. It was written in 1993, and very contemporary kind of thing. And if that's all we played, they couldn't tell whether we could do anything or not. But then we followed it up with a Schubert Unfinished Symphony, which for a symphony goer is a very familiar piece, and we did the Rachmaninoff Concerto. So when we do pieces that are far out, and we do some, we always couple it with something that's very familiar so people can enjoy it. So I think your point is well taken.
Thank you. 1028 on 1080 Radio and 95.1 The One. My guest this morning is Jerry Lance. He is the conductor of the Rochester Symphony Orchestra. He also is the main man, the administrator, CEO. He does it all. We're having fun. We'll be back in a very short time, about 23.2 seconds.
Incorporated in Stanton is proud to salute all their farm friends during National Ag Week on a job well done. Syngenta Seeds knows the importance of farming. Innovation has led Syngenta Seeds to be part of the world's largest supplier of agriculture products. For all your seed needs and crop protection, contact your Syngenta dealer. Syngenta Seeds Incorporated in Stanton.
Well, thank you, Bob. You're on KYMN Radio, 1080 AM. 1028 is the time. And a reminder that Lisa Gardner, a number one New York Times best-selling thriller novelist, is going to be Terry's guest today, Terry Knight's guest, with her latest book, Look for Me. This novel will grab you by the throat and by your heart from the start in Look for Me. Gardner brings back two of her most compelling and complicated characters, fan favorite Sergeant Detective D.D. Warren and victim-turned-vigilante Flora Dane. Full of twists, Lisa keeps the suspense up. She talks about her process and research, and that interview will be at 11 o'clock this morning with Terry Knight on your radio station. This is KYMN. A friend you can count on. Ladies and gentlemen, let's see if my guest this morning can name this tune from 1967. Mics are on. Let me know if you can recognize this song, Jerry.
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with
you. You know who it is?
Who sang that?
And if we go someplace,
I'll give you a hint. Mother, father, daughter.
Frank Sinatra?
Yes.
And Nancy?
Yes.
Afterwards, we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like, I love you.
There you have it. Now, do you like that one?
I love that one.
Okay, I do too. Can you believe my boss over in Tomo, Wisconsin, came in and said, don't play that record anymore.
Hmm.
We had records back then.
Oh, you know,
go ahead.
They're coming back. LPs
yeah.
are coming back. There's you know, that old round format. Yep. You know,
do you have a turntable?
I do, and I can still play my old ones, and I can also play cassettes. I can play CDs, play all that stuff, because a lot of music I have. And there's a store in New York that sells only 33 LPs. It's called All Sales Are Vinyl.
Okay.
It's true. I didn't make that one up.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Brad, do you have a turntable?
Oh, yeah, I still have my turntable.
Okay.
Yep.
How about reel-to-reel tapes?
Don't have a reel. I used to. Don't have it
anymore. I have my dad's reel-to-reel tape, the big Sony one that after he passed away, I kept it because we have a lot of family recordings that I need to get transferred at some point in time.
Well, can I tell you that we do that?
You do.
At our museum. Any format, except 8mm. They don't do that. But you bring those tapes up.
Great, I'll do that.
And they'll put it on a CD, or they'll put it on whatever you want. And they will charge you.
Sure, sure.
And so that way you're donating
yeah.
and getting something done by people that know what they're doing.
That's neat. That's a yeah. great thing, and I need to do that too, Brad.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Good idea. Pavic Museum of Broadcasting, St. Louis Park. From here, you just go to... 62 off 35, and then you go west to 100, and then you go north to 36th Street,
mm-hmm.
and then you go take a right and go two blocks to Raleigh Avenue, and then you take a left, and the second building on your right says Pevick Museum of Broadcasting.
Wayne, what are their hours there?
I think you may have to call, and they changed them.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, as a...
I bet they're online, though. You could probably find that
out
that way, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, when we first got involved in the computer era, the fellow that retired from our Steve said, you know, I got an address on three of all three, blah, blah. And I, you know, what are you talking about? Well, you know, broadcast history, you know, comes to the Pavic Museum. And the Museum of Broadcasting comes to Minnesota. And that was all brand new, but he was smart enough to get those addresses so it would come to our website. So our guest this morning is conductor Jerry Lance. Do you know any of the musical people at St. Olaf or Carleton?
Sure.
Or the Cannon Valley Symphony Orchestra that travels in the summer?
Sure. You know, I have not worked with the Cannon Valley Symphony. I've worked with a lot of the orchestras around. Winona Symphony, Mankato Symphony, Minnesota Orchestra, St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, St. Cloud Symphony.
Which is the best?
Mine.
Okay. All right. You're quick. I like you. All right. So you do work with other people.
Oh, sure.
But you don't have a relationship with St. Olaf's leader of music.
Well, as I said earlier, I filled in for Steve okay. Amundson when he was on sabbatical, and I've worked with a lot of the musicians,
okay.
and some of the musicians who are on the staff there play on the Rochester Symphony.
Okay.
That's
cool.
And, you know, in the musical world, you don't know everybody, but you know a lot of people.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know some of the singing faculty there, as well as, and the choral faculty, as well as the instrumental group of the symphony folk.
Did you know Mighty Johnson?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I knew his daughter worked... had a job with the Minnesota Opera. The first job I had when I came to Minnesota in 1977, I did work for 3 years as the assistant music director of the Minnesota Opera Company, which was in St. Paul. And they still are. It's a great place. Actually, their headquarters is in Minneapolis now, and they've changed a lot. But my first job in Minnesota was with the opera, and Mighty's daughter was working with us in
okay.
that contest. And I knew him.
Have you ever met a girl from Northfield, a woman now, by the name last name Kelly?
Not that I can think of.
Her father's name was Bill, and he had a daughter who ended up, when I say ended up, got into the opera world and performed at that place in Australia.
On the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah. So I thought maybe, you know, you'd run into that name.
I haven't. I'm sorry to say.
So what do you think about opera? I mean, do you enjoy that? How about when you don't know what the words mean?
See, that's a real problem. And when I was with the Minnesota Opera in those days, we performed everything in English. Oh. I conducted The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart, which was originally written in Italian. We didn't sing it in Italian. We sang it in English, and we tried to act it very naturally. And actually, we did it at the Guthrie Theater that was knocked down not too long ago. Their thrust stage in the new Guthrie is built, you know, exactly on that scale. It's exactly the same design. And we did it there. And if you think about the thrust stage at the Guthrie, you realize that there's no place to put an orchestra because the stage thrusts right out into the audience. So we had the orchestra backstage, and then we had camera monitors on the front of the balconies so that the performers on stage, the singers, the chorus, whatever, they would watch the conductor watch me. I didn't do most of the main productions, but occasionally I did. And they'd watch me conduct, and they'd follow that. They could hear the orchestra, and they could see me, and that would keep it together. But one night, we were in the middle of the third act, and one of the monitors went out. And they said, well, that's okay. There's two more going. Then another one went out. And finally, in the middle of the Count's aria, which has a crucial moment right in the middle where everything stops and it starts in again, and you can't start in again unless you're watching the conductor, the third one went out. No monitors. There's John Brandstetter, wonderful baritone, playing Count Almaviva, and he's in the middle of this aria, and he's got to go on. And we had done it enough times together that we happened to go on at exactly the same moment, and it worked out, and then one of the monitors came back on for the rest of the show. And I think some of the audience felt that the staging was a little too much focused in one direction, you know, for the rest of the show, going for the rest of the third act and all of the fourth act, they were going on. Another thing I remember from that run was we were always close to you. We had to bring it in under 3 hours. And the opera lasts, you know, close to 4 hours. And we cut some of the music out, and we moved some of the rest of it along, and we made sure the intermission was cut short. One time, intermission ran several minutes over. They couldn't get the crowd back in. And they said, Jerry, you've got to bring it in under 3 hours, or it's going to cost us thousands of dollars extra to pay the musicians and everything else. You've got to bring it in. It was the fastest fourth act of The Marriage of Figaro. zipped right through it, but we got done in time, about a minute and a half.
And the musicians are union.
Yes.
And they have their rules that go over 3 hours, you got to pay them time and a half or whatever it is. So that's pretty interesting. Now, when you say Figaro, is that the one that Figaro, or whatever?
Same character, different play, different opera. Okay? Pierre de Beaumarchais wrote two revolutionary plays back there in the 18th century. And Beaumarchais, by the way, he wrote the plays. The story of Figaro was an interesting character. He was an international diplomat for France. But he also operated a little bit in New Hampshire. In the late 1780s, no, late 1770s, when there were some people in America who were putting on a little revolution, and the French wanted to help the Americans fight the Brits because they didn't get along very well. So Beaumarchais arranged for ammunition to be brought in to New Hampshire, which was not being nearly as carefully guarded as Boston in the surrounding area. They brought into Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and loaded a lot of French ammunition to supply the Continental soldiers. And this guy was a guy who was infamous in France for writing revolutionary-type plays that were kind of socially, well, it was against the monarchy. And so they turned these into operas. And Mozart turned this one, The Marriage of Figaro, but the other one is called The Barber of Seville.
I've heard of
and
that.
The one you were singing was a line from that by Rossini. And the opera, the story takes place before the one Mozart wrote, but the opera was written after the one Mozart wrote. But that Figaro, Figaro, that was that was from The Barber of Seville.
So where does the comment, it ain't over till the fat lady sings?
You know, I don't know where that came from. You know, and I have to say, there have been enough sopranos who were opera stars who carried considerable weight wherever they went. That is, you know, that's exactly right. But I remember when I was with the Minnesota Opera, they made a big thing about, we don't have the fat ladies. We have people who look like real people and they act like real people and all that sort of thing. But I have to say, some of the I heard a soprano, a Swedish soprano named Birgit Nielsen, when I was in college. She was singing with the New Haven Symphony in Connecticut, where I was in school. And she was a significant woman, shall we say, and she had a huge voice, and they were doing the final act of Salome by Richard Strauss, a huge romantic thing with big soprano part, and the conductor was not keeping the orchestra contained, you know, to balance with the soprano. They were getting louder and louder, and she was getting madder and madder, you can tell it, and she thrust out that big Swedish jaw of hers and cut loose, and she just shattered the orchestra. It was like the orchestra wasn't there. She was so loud, and it was really impressive, and I just loved it. She was so mad. She just gave it all she had, and my ears were ringing. It was spectacular.
What? How many octaves could she sing?
Birgit Nilsson, she could probably sing about 2.5.
That's all?
Yeah. And see, the thing is, if you want to have a lot of power, what you need for an opera singer, you've got to project.
You've got to be breathed diaphragmatically.
You got it, absolutely, as you do if you want to have a good voice on the radio. But if you want to have power in that range, she might have been able to sing a few notes higher or a few notes lower, but they're not ones you could use on stage. You have to be able to project. And they develop such musculature that they do it within a certain fach, as it's called, a certain kind of voice. So while there are people who can do those many octave kind of things, they're stunt doers. They wouldn't survive on the opera stage.
Okay, and there's a fellow, last name I think is Gary, that did like five. And he would
five octaves?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he would practice by scuba diving. And
to build his wind.
Yeah, and he could hold his breath for up to 4 minutes, which is, I'd drown. You probably would drown. But that's how he kept himself going. Beautiful voice. And he wasn't, it was more a popular vein of music.
Sure, and he would sing through a microphone.
Yeah, well, he probably didn't have to at some of the places because he had I'm not that good at. I know what I like when I hear it. It's just like, what is pornography? I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it.
You sound like a Supreme Court justice.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with conductor Jerry Lance of the Rochester Symphony Orchestra right after this important timeout on your radio station. This is KYMN from Northfield, Minnesota.
I love Grandpa's new home. There's so much to do.
That's right. Millstream Commons helps improve the lives of seniors through all kinds of fun activities. Personalized care from a dedicated and well-trained staff, amazing creative meals prepared fresh every day and served in a social setting, live-to-be-healthy fitness classes, private apartments with all the amenities of home, and a place to continue your relationships with family and loved ones. Millstream Commons, your vibrant life continues here.
Name that tune.
You know, it's one of those Brit groups, and I love it.
You know what this is. You were talking about them when you were a kid.
Is this another Beatles song?
Yes.
Wow.
See, Hello,
I haven't heard this for, I haven't heard this for decades.
Right.
And I've never heard it in as I am right now in a headset, because it the recording is so great. I mean, all the things that are going on, it's fantastic.
Well, this is a part I told my granddaughter and other kids, listen to this on the radio, and it will be like on what WCAL was here in Northfield, and
yes,
and NPR stole it. Pinion,
sad
I call that
sad day. I miss them terribly. Yes,
I call that the Wayne editorial.
That's good. But the one person I remember dearly from that, Steve Sterik, who was on CAL,
yeah,
and I was on with him many times, is now on NPR in the afternoon show, and he does a great job, and that's a good thing. But, you know, I was really sorry to see CAL go. And you know what CAL stood for when they made it WCAL?
I read all about it, and I should know, but I'm going to say I don't know.
Calling All Lutherans. And that's not a joke. That's why they call it WCAF.
Well, do you know what we don't say on KYMN Radio?
Mm.
And what that means? I'm going to turn off my mic and tell you, and then we'll turn the mic. Okay, we took that little break. Guys are laughing. But I don't want to say that on the air.
No, that's okay.
And you can understand why. Okay? 14, it's nothing nasty, folks, nothing nasty. 14 minutes before 11 o'clock, and I have an interesting guest in studio. As a matter of fact, I have two of them. And we're just chitting-chatting and finding out. Now, what I was going to tell you is when I would play music from the 40s, the 50s, whether it's popular music or symphonic or whatever, I would say to the young people, all that music you hear was recorded by one band, one orchestra, and one singer. And when they screwed up, they had to start all over
again. They sure did. Yep.
And it was in sync. And then they would release it on vinyl, 78s originally.
Yep.
But the bottom line is, today, it's everybody can be a music wonder with the computer. They can do whatever they want. That kid from Owatonna that had that great big hit, you know, sitting in his bedroom playing with it. They've got, what is it called, Auto-Tune?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's, you know, you being a man of music, what's your observation and concern, if any, of music being produced with parts recorded in Los Angeles and New York and London, and then they all come together and email and put them in, and they don't even know each other.
And if that's what they want to do, I think that's just great. But we make a different kind of music. The kind of music we make, and the whole reason to have a Rochester Symphony, and the whole reason there are concerts at Carlton and St. Olaf, is that music live is where music really lives. That's what we try to do. Our motto, our mission statement for the Rochester Symphony is, we bring great music to life. And we mean we bring it to your lives, but we bring it live music. And there's nothing like being in the presence of live music. Yesterday, we gave this concert, as I explained earlier, with a psychiatrist telling how Rachmaninoff went through therapy in order to be able to create the beautiful music he made. And it had so much effect. There was a woman who came up to me afterward and said, "This is the best concert I've ever been to in my life."
Wow.
And she was older than I am. She'd been to a lot of concerts. But it really moved her because she heard the music live. You can't get moved that way by, no matter how good your stereo system is, no matter how good your headphones are, it's not the same thing as being there in person with the musicians who are creating the music live and being surrounded by other people who are going through that experience too. I love to see movies at the theater. You know, and you can see them at home anytime, get your big screen TV. It's not the same as seeing a movie in the theater with other people who are eating their popcorn and laughing when you laugh and crying when you cry and all that sort of thing. The live experience is irreplaceable.
Well, I have to tell you, I bounce around. I'm going
to
ask you, will you please come back and do this? And then we'll start with where we were born, mom and dad and all that stuff. And right now we're just having fun getting to know each other. Kelsey Grammer.
Yes. Wonderful actor.
What I probably miss half the jokes on, what was that show? The Two Brothers.
The Two Brothers, yeah.
Yeah.
And the
you
younger guy
the
who used, the younger I used to act at the Guthrie.
Yes.
Years ago. Yeah. But
do you remember the name of the show?
Wasn't it the Kelsey Grammer?
Yeah.
They had a name for their comedy. Their
and it was in
comedy.
Seattle.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But anyhow,
it was great.
They would talk about going to the symphony,
mm-hmm.
and they would throw out things that I didn't get it.
Oh, yeah. Allusions to this or that or the other thing.
Yeah. And, you know, you sound like the fifth grade. And then the brothers, oh, my God, don't compare me. And then I don't get it. And then a person like yourself, you probably get it and laugh your butt off.
Well, and that's, I mean, there's jargon and, you know, inside jokes and everything. I mean, people tell jokes about Broadway. I could tell jokes about sports. And, you know, people, if you want to talk to me about sports that were going on in the 50s and 60s when I was growing up, I can remember that. I can remember the Yankees lineup from when I was a kid because the Yankees games were broadcast from my local radio station in Pennsylvania. So I knew the Yankees really well, and I followed sports then. I saw the maybe the greatest football game of all time. I think it was 1958 when the Colts beat the Giants for the, you know, it was pre-Super Bowl. They didn't have a Super Bowl yet. And it was, and I remember those things. But ask me sports today, I don't know because I, you know, I'm not involved in it anymore. And so those references, if people start coming more to concerts, they start going to the movies, they start reading books and that sort of thing and don't have their heads buried in their phones all the time. I mean, I got a smartphone. I use it all the time. I text, I email, and I look up things. But there's a lot more to life than that. And the funny thing is, a few years ago, I made a speech about music. And I was a little worked up. Somebody had gotten me mad. So I said, when you think about it, Bach is better than the Beatles and will last longer. I love the Beatles. But Bach is on a higher level. Beethoven is better than Broadway. And I said, Shostakovich is better than Sha Na Na. That would be a little alliterative there.
Sha Na Na performed here at Carlton.
And they're fun.
And they, and it was a ball. It was a blast. Okay. Bowser?
Yeah. Fantastic. But my point is there are things that last, you know? And while it's wonderful to do new drama, new theater, but nobody's ever been better than Shakespeare. You know, there's something about Shakespeare. And so while we add the new, we should remember the old, too, and keep all of them going.
Now, do you enjoy arranging?
I love to arrange. Yeah, I'm not a composer. I can't. Thinking up the tunes, I don't. But I like to take what other, you know, I do Christmas carol arrangements and make them a lot of fun for people to sing along with. Have our audience sing along with our chorale and our orchestra. You know, that's I find that challenging and rewarding.
Do you have a chorale?
We do in Rochester, yes. We have.
Are they separate of you?
Yes and no. They're the same organization, but they rehearse separately, of course, and they prepare their music. Okay. We have 88 voices in the group right now.
Wow.
And then they come together and they sing, and they'll be singing with us
come
in our ML.
Together one more time.
Yeah. But in our MLK concert on the 21st and 22nd of April, they'll be singing with us and powerfully some of the last music that Martin Luther King heard was Precious Lord, Take My Hand, which a pianist he knew was going to perform later that night. And he said, and King said, I hope you're doing my favorite, Precious Lord. And he says, yes, I am. And he played for some of it. And with a half hour, he had been shot. And so we're going to sing that one, too. And we're going to sing a song that was written by U2 called MLK. And it's about Martin Luther King. And so the chorale will sing that as well. And so we'll have this, and my arrangement of America the Beautiful for our chorale and our orchestra. No one else has done it. That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah, and a great song that some people say should have been our national anthem.
Yeah.
I love the Star-Spangled Banner. I love America the Beautiful. You can fight over it. I like to do them both.
Well, okay, but isn't the Star-Spangled Banner a challenge for
individual
singers,
yes.
Yeah.
We have a young man who's going to be our soloist, and there he's 14 years old. He has
really?
A remarkable voice.
Is he a soprano type?
He's in between.
Yeah.
He's in between a male voice and a female voice.
Yeah.
And he's got this wonderful, rich color, and he is a friend of a friend, and he's actually from the Twin Cities. But I arranged that he start taking lessons with a top professor of voice at the University of Minnesota, and I introduced them, and now they're working together, and his voice will grow as a result of working with my friend John. And Leo's going to be our soloist there. He's a very special kid. And I'm trying to find out from John, his teacher, what key Leo should be singing the national anthem. And the first time I heard him do it, I thought it was A-flat, so I faked it in A-flat. You know, I can fake the national anthem in any key. And he sounded great in it, but I don't know what key he'll be doing in it now. I've got to make sure we have an arrangement for the orchestra and the chorale in the right key and all that, because the concert's coming up in the middle of April. But so that's involving, again, a kid from the community. He's from the Twin Cities, but, you know, singing the Star Spangled Banner, which is, you know, a legendary.
With your orchestra
behind
him. With the orchestra
and the chorale behind him, yeah.
And you can arrange it so that when they reach for the high points, you can also have that suspense.
That's right. Yeah. Yep, have those chords right behind, supported by the chorale and the orchestra. By the way, you're a Minnesotan. Who is the most famous relative of Francis Scott Key following his time? He was not a direct descendant, but he was a St. Paul boy.
Okay, from St. Paul. Well, I think he
was named after Francis Scott Key, too.
Okay, so is Francis so-and-so?
Francis Scott Key
Board.
Fitzgerald.
Oh.
F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah?
His real name was Francis Scott Key Fitzgerald. He was related to.
Okay.
Yeah. Minnesota. Minnesota trivia.
Well, that is good. We have one last break, and then we'll come back and continue our conversation for a couple of minutes. And don't forget that Terry Nate will be up with 15 with the author following the Wayne Eddy Affair.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Flexion Care Suites on the campus of Three Links here in Northfield offers comfort care in a home-like environment. We provide compassionate, specialized end-of-life care to residents and families during phases of an incurable illness. We have a wonderful staff that provides the highest quality of care, supporting each resident's personal wishes. I am Susan Samuelson, Clinical Nurse Manager of Reflections. You can call me at 664-8809 for a tour of this beautiful facility.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. 1967. That's the title, The Letter.
Very faint in my memory.
Okay.
Very faint. Of course, most things are now.
Box Top. I like this song. Here's the way it went. Number 10 in the year 67. That you graduated in 1967 from what high school?
East Stroudsburg High School in Pennsylvania.
All right. By the way, Pennsylvania is a beautiful state.
It is.
I loved it. We drove all the way across it.
On Route 80? Or on the
all
turnpike?
I know is there were like mountains and big mounds and trees and dairy farms, and it was just beautiful.
Interstate 80 in Pennsylvania goes all the way across the state and went through my backyard. We sold part of our backyard so they could build the road. Didn't have any choice.
You know what? I think we may have taken a road that preceded the freeway.
Uh-huh.
And just got to go through the little towns and all that.
Sure.
The Beatles with Hello, Goodbye, number 10. The Turtles with Happy Together. Remember that one? Number 9. The Doors, you got that one right, Light My Fire, was number 8. Number 7, The Box Tops and the Letter. And number 6 was The Young Rascals with Groovin' on a Saturday. You know, Nancy Sinatra and Frank with Something Stupid, 5. Bobby Gentry, Ode to Billy Joel.
Oh, wow.
What was it she threw off that bridge?
Yeah, the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Yeah. Number 4, The Association by by The Association.
Love that song.
Daydream Believer, number 2, by The Monkees. And the number 1 song, hard to believe, 1967, was Lulu, To Sir With Love.
Oh, wow, yeah, sure.
Remember that?
The movie. Yeah.
Well, I am going to do one thing here before we conclude, and we're concluding because 11 o'clock is coming. Number 1, Brad, I'd like to have you come up and do a single interview with me and chit-chat.
Okay.
Okay. Did I give you enough shout-outs for home finance?
You did
finance?
A great job. That wasn't the purpose today.
I know that, but I'd like.
Yeah.
I'm glad we could.
Appreciate it.
And we all love Home Federal Bank. We do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Jerry Lance, can you find a time in your busy schedule where we can do what I normally do with an interview and start when you were, where were you born, mom and dad, grandma, grandpa, and Pennsylvania,
sure. Absolutely.
High school?
Yeah.
Here's a question I can ask right now.
Okay.
You played a little bit of basketball.
I did.
Do you remember one play that or one game when you were a kid playing basketball?
I do.
What is it?
You mean with the particular game?
Save it for when you come up, okay?
I will.
Because we all remember that stuff, but nobody, you don't talk to people about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can.
Good.
That's why I love my job. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Thank you.
This is your radio station. We are KYMN 1080 AM radio, and we are also 95.1 The One FM from Northfield, Minnesota.
It's time for 15 with the Author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
Lisa Gardner is a number one New York Times best-selling thriller novelist. She's my guest today with her latest, Look for Me. This